I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver. This is thecommentary.ca. One of my favorite guests in the life of this program over the last 6 years joins me again. I'm always delighted to have Jim Taylor on because he's a great writer and he's got great stories. There are some great stories in his new book, And to Think I Got In Free, Highlights from 50 Years on the Sports Beat. It's a great collection of columns featuring the good and not-so-good sports figures he's covered. You have larger-than-life people in this book, people from Sam Snead to Wilt Chamberlain, Archie the Mongoose Moore to Wayne Gretzky. You also have pieces on Sandra Schmirler, Percy Williams, and Billy Gould. They're marvelous columns and just great writing. I'm not a sports fan, but the events and people in these columns come to life because Jim is such a gifted writer. On the 1st of November, Jim Taylor will receive, and deservedly I might add, the Bruce Hutchinson Lifetime Achievement Award from the Jack Webster Foundation, one of the most, if not the, prestigious award for journalism in this province. He's already a member of the CFL and BC Sports Halls of Fame, as well as the recipient of a Lifetime Achievement Award from Sports Media Canada. This is his 14th book, and it's from Harbor Publishing. Please welcome back to the Plant on the Line program, Jim Taylor. Good morning, Mr. Taylor.
Good morning. How are you?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Oh, good. You know, I'm so proud to get the Hutchinson Award, you know, but my first thought was, my God, I must be old.
And I noticed that you're the only one from the sports field of journalism to get it.
Yeah, that made me really, I was really pleased about that, because, you know, for a long time, not so much now, but for a long time, the sports department was looked at as the toy department.
Yeah.
And I used to get mad and say, okay, I tell you what, here's what we'll do. I'll take Denny Boyd and Archie MacDonald and Jim Kearney and me, and you pick four guys from Cityside and let's go. Give us all the same assignment and see who wins. It was never taken up because the logistics didn't work. But Ernest Hemingway was a sports writer.
Yeah.
Paul Gallico was a sports writer. Jimmy Breslin was a sports writer. The only difference, ability aside, is the fact that I stayed.
Yeah. Did you know Hutchinson?
And no. I came along and found, to my chagrin, later on, that he actually had a cabin about half of, you know, a quarter of a mile or something from our place at Shawnigan Lake, and I could have gone over and said hello. Mm-hmm. and didn't know. But he was an outstanding writer, of course, and kind of my hero in one sense, at least, because he filed his last column in his 90th year.
Yeah.
So that's not bad.
No.
That's a good target.
Yeah, and Webster, were you friends with him?
Acquainted. You know, I didn't, Jack was more politics and that sort of thing and did it brilliantly, but I didn't associate much. One thing that did stick in my mind, after he retired, and he just missed it so much, and a friend of mine said, Jack said, all I want to be is relevant.
Yeah. Yeah, you mentioned in one of the interviews we've done previously some of the previous column collections that you've done.
Yeah,
and how you had to go and get rights and from the papers, I guess. Did you have to do a lot of that for this book?
They were very generous. I phoned the Sun and the Province, and they just said yes, go ahead. And I talked to the people at the Calgary Sun, who also agreed and said fine, no problem. So this one was easier. And I almost didn't do it, but I guess ego got in the way or something.
Yeah.
And I decided to take a run at it, and I'm really pleased.
Did you have to go back and read all of your previous work?
Well, I had them. You know, I've got a paper copy of every column I ever wrote, and they stretched down a wall in my basement because there's between 7,500 and 8,000 of them.
Yeah.
But I remembered, I started thinking in terms of people and thinking in terms of the events and thinking in terms of things I just liked that I wrote. And some of them were, not significant in a column sense or in a world sense, but I liked them. They were just, I enjoyed writing them and thought they turned out pretty well.
In reading the pieces in the book, I noticed that they capture the times well. When you look back at them, when you read them again, is that fun for you? And do you think of where you were when you were writing them?
Oh, sure. And some of them, I thought, I could have done this better. I still, to to, and even when I pick up a newspaper sometimes, I have a pencil in my hand, and I take words out, you know, when things are, I deem to be overwritten, I sort of scratch them out, which is kind of crazy, but that's me. But I, some of them I thought, you know, I could have done this. I could have done this better. What was I thinking? And some of the columns that didn't make the paper, Joe, I thought, oh, Lord, what was I thinking?
Yeah.
You know, please take me now.
And the feedback from readers over the years, I mean, you mentioned in the book that because of the Internet, you would get letters faster than in the old days, I guess.
Oh, right? They were a godsend because, you know, guys would, some letters, of course, were very thoughtful, and some of them were just people ragging on me, you know, usually misspelled, and I liked those best because you could answer them, and that provided another column.
Yeah.
Everything was grist.
You also have, when I read the pieces in this book, it seems like you're having fun.
Oh, absolutely. And that is my big argument, you know, and you and I have talked about this before.
Yeah.
I was determined that I wasn't going to become one of these tiresome old farts who sits around and says everything was good and everything now is bad. But I really don't believe that they're having as much fun as we used to, partially because they don't have time. Guys don't just write columns anymore. They have to then rush to the Internet and do blogs, whatever the hell they may be. And I just don't think there's as much time. Certainly there are writers who could, like, I tried to write humorously, and sometimes I made it and sometimes I didn't. But and there are certainly guys out there now who could. But whether it's time or whether choice or whether the paper doesn't want them to, they don't seem to be doing it.
Who are some of the writers that you enjoy reading today?
Well, the older guys I enjoy most. I mean, Cam Cole and Ian McIntyre on The Sun. Ian McIntyre, if he would just quit covering hockey and write a column, could be brilliant. But he loves hockey and chooses to stay where he is. Cam Cole, of course, has been around for a long time, and I always read Cam. And Eddie Willis over at my old stomping ground, the province. There are good writers out there. I just don't know whether, as I say, they're having as much fun or for whatever reason they're allowed to have fun. I don't know.
Were you ever tempted to go into, like Roy McGregor, for example, or Christy Blatchford, to go from sports to something else, to politics, or?
Not really. I did do some of it. I mean, when I was at the Columnist and places like that, they would haul me out to write the funny stuff. I didn't really. And Bill Gibb used to call me a shut-in columnist. And he was always after me to go into politics. He says you'd have a lot of fun, and there's a lot of targets out there. But my argument always was, yeah, but my road trips are better.
Yeah.
You know, so I frankly, I think I'm pretty aware of my limitations, and I wasn't interested in politics. I wasn't aware of it. I'm a people writer, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just happen to be writing sports, but basically I'm a people writer.
What didn't you enjoy about covering sports?
Most of the people were great, as they are in any business, I guess. Some of them are just total jerks. I really didn't like, and this will get me in trouble, but I really didn't and still don't like the emphasis that is put on the Canucks. You know, if a Canuck farts, it's six pages, you know. There's a classic example. Last week, on a Thursday night at home, the Vancouver Whitecaps won a playoff game. I picked up the province the next day, and there were 16 pages of sports, 8 of them involving hockey, before you even got to any mention of the Whitecaps. And to me, that's just insane.
Yeah. There's a wonderful chapter in the book where your wife, the former Deborah Easton,
yeah,
is featured.
Yeah.
That's just a wonderful chapter of columns. And you guys have been married 50 years?
Yeah, 50 years come October 29th.
Oh, that's great.
And we, you know, I kid her and say, you know, the warranty's just about up.
Yeah.
But she was, you know, the thing about Deb is that Deb is far brighter than I. You know, I mean, she was doing DNA research when I was wondering who's going to play goal for the Canucks. And she doesn't, she really, truly doesn't like sports. I mean, no, that's not fair. She doesn't dislike them. She just doesn't understand why anyone would.
Yeah.
And because she's a doer. She's traveled all over the place and prefers to do that. So it made her a wonderful foil in terms of writing columns.
Yeah. So what's it like at your house if you're watching sports or cover, you know, you're doing your job?
That's why we have a basement.
Ah, that's a secret, I guess, right?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. When I first met Deb, and we were engaged and married very quickly, and it just clicked, and we were going to get our first apartment, and her mother said to me, "Be sure you get two rooms." And I said, "Why?" She said, "You'll need a door to slam." And I thought that was absolutely profound. And it was very true. So when I want to watch a sports event, if Deb is upstairs, I'll just go down. I have a big office down below with a big TV, and I watch it there.
Mm.
You know, but you know, I was just thinking, as it be, what you'd said before, the columns that I liked, that I really enjoyed, many of them weren't about great athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them were about, you know, you mentioned Billy Gould.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful story. And I think in that book, the column that affected me most was the one about Teresa Fantello, the lady who died of cancer at age 35. And another one in there with a girl I didn't name who was a former gymnast, and she was going to try for the Canadian Olympic team, which she would have made in 1976, missed her plane, and the next day, that night, she was in a car, and some drunk hit them from behind and killed three people, and she's quad. And she was next to my daughter, who was in a coma at the time in hospital, and you know, they just, they both sort of captured for me the human spirit and the just raw courage to keep going.
We mentioned Billy Gould. He's a Special Olympian.
He was a Special Olympian. Yeah. We got a phone call from somebody who said that they saw this boy, 19, 20, something like that, delivering papers and one leg dragged, and he obviously had some sort of mental impairment, but they said, "He's always smiling, and when we talk to him, we feel good." But nobody seems, we think it's a good story, and nobody seems to want to do it. So, and I went and did it, and it was wonderful, sort of lump in the throat stuff.
Yeah, it's a last column in the book, and it's just, I mean, I still think about it days after reading it. There's also a piece in the book about Al Davidson. Now, I was 10 when he died, so the only time I got to hear him or of him was when Jack Cullen used to play a clip.
Yeah.
You were friends with him?
Very much so.
Yeah.
And he would lash me.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd write columns and lash back at him, but if he needed a friend, he was there. He was very colorful character, and it's, you know, sport is as much character driven as it is athleticism driven, and he was the local icon. I turned down a very good radio opportunity to do a daily radio show, a sports editorial show, because they wanted to do it at 5:35, and I said, "Nobody will hear me. Everybody's listening to Al."
Yeah.
I mean, he owned this town. And I'm still trying to get him into the BC Sports Hall of Fame because I think he belongs. But yeah, he was a great character. And some of the, you know, I suppose when I look at the book, I suppose I leaned a little, perhaps too heavily, on people who, columns about people who had passed away. But the columns came out at the, not a word in those columns was changed. I mean, everything was written. There are columns in there that I know I could have written better, but I let them run the way they had appeared. And, you know, some of the great characters, Nick the Matchmaker and Byron Scott, and you know, and you mentioned the Sam Snead story, which I just thought was wonderful. This old hillbilly who told me that in Virginia, when the skunks attacked, you always liked it because your mom would dig a hole and put your clothes in the dirt so that the smell would go away, and because you only had one pair of pants, that meant you didn't have to go to school. You know, stuff like that. I just lived for.
Yeah, there's a chapter in the book about sex and sports.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods, you mentioned him in the intro to that. What did you make of the whole thing?
The Tiger Woods thing?
Yeah.
I thought he was, morality aside, I thought he was terminally stupid. I mean, how do you, you're the most recognizable athlete in the world, and in an age of internet and cell phone cameras and paparazzi, how did he possibly feel that he wasn't going to get caught? And I think, and this is opinion because I haven't talked to anybody, but I think the guys covering the tour had to know.
Mm.
I mean, they had to know.
Yeah.
They and I've seen that happen before, where there's just an unwritten rule that the media don't talk. When Michael Jordan was charged with gambling, you know, not legally charged, but and the league was investigating, and he promptly retired. And then when they had the press conference and the question was going to be asked, well, when he came out of retirement, does this mean that the investigation is now open? Those guys were told going in, there will be no questions about the gambling. Well, if you're doing your job, screw that.
Has there been a change, though, in how the sports is covered and the people are covered? I mean, 50 years ago, do you think they would have written about Tiger Woods'
affairs? No. 50 years ago... well, first of all, probably the papers wouldn't have let them. And maybe, God, I was just thinking, I was there 50 years ago.
Yeah.
In the old days, heroes had to be heroes, and that was it. I mean, I remember reading a piece about Gene Tunney, and he was described as an intellectual fighter. And look and see why. It's because they had a photo and he was holding a book. It's changed now, Joe, because, and I think one of the reasons is the net, and also the media conglomerates. I mean, the newspapers, radios, and television stations, all owned by the same people, and they make cross-promotional deals with the media. Well, I think I rather inelegantly described it in one of those columns. It's like the temple walls you see in India, and you can't tell who's screwing whom.
Yeah.
You know, it's like talking about kids. You know, I think every generation feels it has an obligation to say the next generation is going to hell. I think that there's some really good young writers coming up, and I probably couldn't even name them. I just read the stuff, and I think that's well done, or, you know, that wasn't well done. Things have changed. I frankly don't know if I could exist in it the way it is now, because there's too many commitments. The logic to me is just incredible. A guy goes and does an interview for a column, and then he comes back and puts the entire taped interview on the internet, thereby beating himself to his own column by 16 hours.
Yeah.
I could not write for the net. People phone up and they say, why don't you write a blog? Guy phoned me and he said, why don't you write a blog? I said, okay, how much?
Yeah.
And he said, well, you don't get paid to write blogs. I said, well, then why in the name of God would I write a blog?
Yeah.
You know? Well, you get your opinion out there. Oh, thanks a lot.
Yeah. The column that I enjoyed in that chapter on sex and sports was the Wilt Chamberlain column.
Yeah. You know, someone ghost wrote a book for him. And he claimed that, I forget what the figure was.
20,000.
20,000, yeah. And that he had sex with 20,000 women. And I did the math and said if he started out at age 15, he would have to be, you know, 2.2.
Yeah.
That there were nights when he'd have to double up. And if he had a headache, then it would be worse. Yeah, I'd like to do that kind of stuff. But, you know, the column that I enjoyed more than anything, when I wrote it and again when I read it, was Willie O'Ree, the 15-year-old black kid from the Maritimes, first black guy ever to play in the NHL, and breaking the barrier and walking into a barber shop where it was quite understood that Caucasian barbers did not cut black hair.
Yeah.
And he did it, you know, and I keep thinking, I have this picture of this kid with his heart pounding and, you know, and pushing through the door and as he said, listening to the silence.
Yeah. Are you working on another book now?
Yeah, I'm working on a book with Bobby Lanarduzzi of the Whitecaps. I was around for all of the glory days of the Whitecaps, and it's a great story, and the publisher asked me if I would do it, and strangely enough, I had been sort of thinking about doing it 5 or 6 years ago, and something came up, and the other books came along, and I didn't, but yeah, I it's going to be very good, and I've given myself an impossible deadline, because when the new league opens, it opens March the 17th, and I said to the publisher, well, you know, the only logical thing to do is launch this book the week that the league opens. And he said, well, no, that can't be done because we'd need 2 months, and that would mean that you would have to have the book finished by January the 15th, and, you know, you can't do that. And I said, you want to bet?
Yeah.
And so that's the next one, and I'm quite looking forward to it. I look forward to all of them. You know, they're all a little different. They all have different sets of problems, but mostly they're fun.
Yeah,
and it's what I do, you know.
Yeah, and so you won't get a Twitter, right?
I do not twit. Neither do I face.
Yeah,
you know, I, and you know, it's fine if it works for people. That's good for them, but it's not for me. I don't. I just think that there's a lot of time wasted. I mentioned it in the book, a friend of ours said that Twitter was going to change the world, and I just raised the question, well, how far do you think Shakespeare would have gotten with Hamlet, you know, if he was limited to 300 characters, and he'd have to, you know, 2B would be the number 2 and the letter B, and then or not, and another 2 and another B,
yeah.
And he'd have to quit after 300 characters, you know?
Yeah.
It's just not for me, and People love it. I don't understand. A lady told me that she can read Lorraine Bacall's Twitter.
Yeah.
And I said, well, okay, why? You know.
Jim, thanks for this. I hope this book sells a lot of copies.
Well, I hope it is. It's stuff that a lot of stuff there that people haven't read because there were the 6 years that I was in writing out of Vancouver for the Toronto Sun Chain and it never appeared here. So there's some good stuff. I think people will laugh. And as I said the other day, if I've done it properly, there's going to be perhaps some time when they cry.
Yeah.
Because there's some emotional stuff there. But I'm still the luckiest guy who ever lived.
Yeah. As ever, Jim, it's been good to talk to you. And even if you don't have a book, can I call?
Oh, absolutely. Okay, fine. That's good.
Yeah. The book is called And to Think I Got In Free, Highlights from 50 Years on the Sports Beat. It's from Harper Publishing. Do pick it up. It's a great collection. There's, as Jim says, you can laugh, you can cry, and all the other stuff in between. The great Jim Taylor on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.